This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, President Trump has named his nominee for the Supreme Court. We'll talk about the role that Texas senators have been and will be playing in the confirmation process. We'll touch on some corporate handouts in Central Texas, and we'll hear about a new tool that activists are using to protect their property rights. We'll talk to attorney Trey Traynor about an ongoing threat to the First Amendment rights of Texans, and Brandon Waltons will join us for this week's commentary. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Wanted to get started with this week's news, the big news, President Trump making his nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. Wanted to talk about a Texas connection on that story. For that, I've got Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Thanks for coming in, Carrie.
Glad to be here, Tony.
So I wanted to talk about the role that Texas Senators John Cornyn and Ted Cruz have played in the lead up to this nomination, and then, you know, what role they might play in the coming weeks and months as Judge Kavanaugh goes through the confirmation process.
That's right. So you kind of saw the big news with Anthony Kennedy announcing that he would be retiring from the Supreme Court. Anthony Kennedy, a Republican justice, but one who's been the swing vote on the court for a number of years, delivering the majority opinion in Obergefell that legalized gay marriage all across the nation. Now Trump has nominated Brett Kavanaugh to that position, but kind of over the lead-up, we saw a number of different moves by Texas's senators. You had John Cornyn throwing cold water on conservative hopes that this would be a justice that would overturn Roe v. Wade, and you had Ted Cruz back-channeling to oppose Brett Kavanaugh and support a kind of more rigorous conservative like his colleague Mike Lee to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the subtext, or maybe the text of what's going on here. Anthony Kennedy, a mostly pro-abortion rights justice on the court, sometimes allows certain restrictions, but certainly not a vote against Roe v. Wade. And he's retiring from the court, and so it would appear, if Republican strategy is what it appears to be, and it maybe isn't, is we're going to have a fifth justice who would ostensibly overturn Roe v. Wade in the national policy of abortion, you know, open abortion available, you know, available to all everywhere in every state, and put this issue back to state governments. That looks like it's a possibility, but there's kind of some concern there.
Right. I mean, it's something that Republican voters have been hoping for, you know, ever since Roe v. Wade was decided. You know, you've had Republicans running, promising to promote pro-life judges. It's been very hard once they've actually come there because they've just appointed judges and hoped that they've been pro-life.
Right.
Trump said he was going to appoint judges he knew that were pro-life. And that's kind of the problem here.
Yeah, and you've had Senator Cornyn out saying, well, I don't want, you know, we don't want a nominee who is openly opposed to Roe v. Wade. We want somebody who's going to be cagey on the issue, like most of the justices have been cagey in the past. The defense there is, well, maybe he's just trying to whip the votes to get somebody on the court, but you risk saying, well, maybe this guy won't really be pro-life at all.
Right, and it's this kind of sentiment is the reason why we have Roe, which was decided while there were eight Republican justices on the Supreme Court. And right now, there's only one justice that we know would vote to overturn it, and that's Clarence Thomas, who did so in Planned Parenthood v. Casey in his dissent. Of course, not victorious there, but that's the only known person on the Supreme Court that we know would vote to overturn Roe v. Wade.
And so the real question here is, are you going to put somebody, President Trump ran for office saying, I want pro-life judges, very open, very straightforward about it, but you've got this different strategy. Senator Cruz expressing some concern about Kavanaugh in the lead up to his nomination.
Right. The rumor around D.C. was that he was back-channeling and telling Trump that Kavanaugh could potentially disappoint conservatives if he got on the Supreme Court, just like Anthony Kennedy ended up doing. Him, Tom Cotton of Arkansas, and Mike Lee of Utah were all pushing for a more conservative, solidly conservative justice over there, unsuccessful. But since Barrett has been nominated, since Brett Kavanaugh,
The alternative being Amy Barrett, one of the short list judges who seemed a little more likely to be a stronger pro-life
She seemed rather stridently pro-life, but since Brett Kavanaugh has been appointed, or been nominated, excuse me, Cruz has said that he will support his nomination and looks forward to asking him questions on the Judiciary Committee.
So what role will Cruz and Cornyn play in the nomination, the confirmation process going forward?
Well, they're members of the Judiciary Committee, so they'll be pretty active questioners of Brett Kavanaugh as he goes through that process. And then I anticipate that both of them will be whipping the votes for him within the Republican caucus, trying to get to the 50 plus one that they need to get him over the edge and get him on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think we're looking at, it seems like things are lining up for him to be confirmed to the court. But the real question is, what kind of justice will he be? And that's really, truly an open question.
It's an open question that we won't know the answer to probably until 5 years from now.
Now let's go up and talk to Aaron Anderson. Aaron, you've been writing about citizens working together to get better property rights protections in their counties. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, that's right, Tony. Groups of citizens are organizing to collect petition signatures to get a vote on whether to end forced annexation within their counties.
Yeah, and so this is something that came out of the last legislative session. Basically, the legislature said, hey, in the most populous counties of the state, we're going to stop forced annexation. We're going to require voter approval before a city can reach out and grab up new territory. But they left more rural communities, or most counties in the state, kind of hanging in the wind. But there is this option for those counties to opt in. And so we're seeing groups actually go out and organize and do that, most likely in Freestone County. Tell us a little bit about what they're doing.
That's right. Freestone is actually the fourth county to successfully circulate petitions amongst their citizens. The law requires 10% of registered voters to sign a petition in order to get what they call an opt-in measure on the ballot, so voters can decide if they want to opt in to these property rights protections and prevent being forcibly annexed.
And so basically what they go out and do is they go and talk to their neighbors. They hustle, they have this conversation, and it's a very popular idea. Hey, we just want the right to vote on whether we would be subject to some annexation. And it's something that seems to be resonating with voters in these rural counties. This late push here to get on the November ballot, what are the deadlines? What are the options? If somebody's listening out there, they say, man, that's a great idea. What are their options moving forward?
Well, it's about a six-month process from the time you start circulating petitions to getting a measure on your ballot. Several counties have already done it. Parker, Wise, and Johnson are on track, as is Freestone, to have their opt-in measures on the November ballot. Other counties are gearing up to get on the next go-round of the May 2019 ballot.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what other counties follow these first few counties' leads. And it'll be interesting to see how the campaign goes as we get to November. So I appreciate your reporting on it. Look forward to more of it.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with Texas Scorecard Central Texas Bureau. Americans, a lot of Texans have been paying attention to the World Cup recently. Excited about football or soccer, football as they call it elsewhere. Reason for taxpayers in Austin not to be excited about soccer. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so a Major League Soccer team from Ohio called the Columbus Crew is trying to move to Austin. They want to build a stadium, but they're trying to make a deal with the city to get a bunch of special perks in return.
So we've seen this before. You see it with football teams. You see it with baseball teams. And, of course, here with the National Major League Soccer program, they want to bring this team in, and they want to give tons of handouts for this stadium. Tell us about some of the problems.
Tony, if the Austin City Council would be a terrible goalie, okay? They're just getting pillaged by this team. The team is coming in and saying, hey, we want only $1 a year lease on this stadium. We want you to pay insurance on this $200 million stadium. And most of all, we want complete exemption from property taxes.
So as other Austinites, as people who live in the city, pay their taxes, and whether this is, you know, residents or small businesses or, you know, whatever, you know, as they pay their taxes, this group gets to move in no taxes.
Exactly. And that's really the crux of this, Tony, and what's wrong about these corporate handouts is that it's crooked favoritism, right? most businesses in Austin don't receive all these special perks from the city, but yet this soccer team wants to come in and get special treatment.
Middle of World Cup mania, everybody's excited about soccer. Let's talk about soccer. It's good for the politicians, so they hand out the money.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, if a soccer team, if any sports team wants to come to Austin, great. You know, let them. The city doesn't need to get involved and start giving out bukus and bukus of taxpayer money.
In typical Austin fashion, the handouts aren't the only problem. There's some parking issues, the affordable housing. Yeah. You've written about this. Very, very interesting.
So the proposal is for a 20,000 seat stadium with only a little over 1,000 parking spaces.
Everybody's going to walk to the game,
or
apparently.
Get, you know, cram 20 people per car.
Yeah, and, right. And then apparently they're going to house people in the stadium now as well.
Yeah, the city of Austin complained that the team's proposal didn't have affordable housing on the property. So they're going to be including that as well.
Well, you're going to have to keep an eye. The proposal is not final.
Not finally approved.
You'll have to keep us updated on this. You've got a very fun job here with Central Texas. Always some kind of craziness going on with the city of Austin.
Oh, you know it.
Appreciate you coming in and keeping us apprised of it.
Thanks, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on as this week's guest, Trey Traynor, attorney here in Austin, Trump's appointee to the Federal Elections Commission, awaiting confirmation hearings. So we'll find out when those happen, maybe next decade sometime, the way Washington works. But I wanted to have you on to talk about an issue very vital to free speech. It came up at the Texas Ethics Commission, the state-level election regulator here in Texas. And you were there testifying before the commission week or so ago, and testifying and saying, hey, there's some problems with the process at the commission, and the chairman of the commission saying, well, you know, our process just doesn't really matter, you know, it just doesn't really count at the end of the day. I was kind of astounded by that. So I wanted to bring you in to talk a little bit about it. What are the concerns there? What's at stake? What's at stake at the state-level agency? What's at stake at the federal level? Just to hash these issues out, I think it'll be very interesting to listeners.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on, Tony. And yes, I was at the Ethics Commission. You know, the process for passing rules for all of the state agencies requires that they have a public hearing on it. And I just showed up as somebody who practices in front of the Ethics Commission and said, you know, first of all, it's been 25 years since the commission was created, and they didn't have any rules at all.
Yeah.
when that's been brought to their attention, they still didn't do anything about it. So now it's about 5 years later, they get around to, okay, well, maybe we need to pass some rules.
I mean, it really is amazing. So this thing was created in the early 90s, and the law says, hey, you're supposed to adopt rules to govern your process.
Right.
People file complaints against, you know, basically there's these election laws, and they accept complaints. It's almost always a political opponent.
Absolutely.
Filing a complaint against their political opponent in order to score some political points.
Right.
And these things show up at the commission, and they go through a whole process there.
Sure.
That's kind of like a court, but it's certainly not like a court in other ways. And, you know, courts have rules, but this commission didn't have rules. So they're finally adopting the rules. So that's good news.
Right. That's good news that they're doing that. But the rules that they adopted really have problems, and it really speaks to problems that we have at the administrative state level anyways, and that is really a lack of due process that's available there. And I'll give you an example. I mean, if you're a plumber, an electrician, and you have a license in the state, and somebody makes a complaint that you do some bad work, and you go in front of the commission, and there are other plumbers and electricians who look at that and say, yeah, Tony, you did some bad work, and you need to be fined for that. Well, here at the Ethics Commission, what they've put in place is said, well, we're going to use the regular rules of evidence like you would use in a court, but we're not going to have a judge or even an attorney be responsible for making evidentiary rulings. We're just going to let whoever happens to be the chair that year be the one in charge of it.
So without any training on evidence, with any training on process, and being the guy who is kind of prosecutor, administrator, and a judge.
Right.
This is the guy who's going to decide, well, this is what's evidence and this is what isn't evidence.
Right, right. You know, in these processes, especially at the Ethics Commission, I mean, somebody files a complaint, it's 18 months at a minimum before the commission even gets around to considering the complaints. And once they do, you have this process where now the chairman of the commission is going to rule on everything. And, you know, the commission can, they can do things like issue subpoenas for people to show up. I mean, if you can imagine, I've seen complaints there, people from El Paso having to drive in to testify for 5 minutes in front of the Ethics Commission because they've been subpoenaed to appear.
Yeah.
You know, and when you have that type of power over individuals, it really needs to have all of the regular safeguards of due process, and they're just not there. And it's, and this is just going to fundamentally damage our free speech rights.
Yeah, and so it's most critical. I mean, we're talking about the Texas Ethics Commission. We're talking about an agency that regulates election activity, but what does that really mean? Well, it means regulating speech,
yes,
regulating people's activity, whether it's putting out signs or sending mail to their neighbors or making phone calls or putting a website or the newest rules dealing with the internet, right?
Right. So right. Absolutely.
There was this open question of every time somebody says, you know, vote for Trump in a tweet that they had to put a disclaimer on it or whether they don't.
Right.
I mean, this is an agency that deals in speech. And so all of these issues that are critical to the issues with administrative law and administrative agencies and that process, you know, when we're talking about an electrician being dragged across the state to defend his license, that can be a real issue. That
Absolutely.
Can be an issue of livelihood. But we're actually talking about something more important when we talk about these election commissions, because it has to do with basically the most fundamental right that we have, our First Amendment right to speak freely.
Well, and you've seen, and you've done a very good job of mentioning it anytime we talk about the Ethics Commission, where the commission has seen, you know, the ladies from the local Republican Women's Club or the
Democrat Ladies
voters,
Club,
show up. You know, they show up and they've run afoul of some campaign finance law, and they show up crying, begging and pleading not to be fined $500, $600 because, one, they didn't know about it, and two, you know, the processes are just so hard to deal with at the Ethics Commission. They haven't done anything to make those easier. And what it does is it spoils people on the process. I don't know how many times I've seen somebody walk out of the Ethics Commission and just say, you know what, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
And so what they're giving up at that point, because of the regulations from the state, they're giving up their own right to participate in our government. And it shouldn't be that someone has to come and hire a lawyer to be able to speak politically. I mean, if you're upset about some local laws at the city council, you should be able to get up. If, you know, if you want to print flyers, print out those flyers, go to the city council meeting and pass them out. You know, and the Supreme Court has actually said you can do that. But here in Texas, what we experienced at the Ethics Commission recently is they don't even want to recognize that, you know, individuals have a basic fundamental right to engage in anonymous political speech. They want to say if you're buying a Facebook post or if you were to write out, you know, I support Tony McDonald for governor and put it, and I
am not announcing my campaign.
You know, but you put that on a Facebook page and I say, you know what, I think Tony's great and I'm going to promote my own Facebook post. You know, they're talking about whether or not that has to be disclaimed. When I spend my own money for my own Facebook post, I have to put it out there to encourage all of my friends and family to support Tony.
And disclosed, you know, and filing paperwork with the state, which pretty typically means go hire a lawyer because it's difficult to understand how these things work. What really is startling to me with this process is, look, if I get pulled over for speeding, you know, I'm going down the highway, I'm 10 over, lights come on, I'm pulled over, I'm given a citation. It's this, you know, it's every reason, it's a little thing, right? It's a fine. It's not the biggest thing in the world. I'm entitled to go to a local judge, to a local court, to have a full-blown trial with criminal procedure protections. I'm allowed to go in and say, I plead the fifth, I'm not putting any evidence on it. In fact, the state has to prove I was speeding beyond a reasonable doubt, as if they were trying to prove that I murdered a guy, right? And so we have all of that protection there over what is ultimately, you know, a little thing and a small fine. But here we've got an agency that's regulating people's political speech. their participation in government and saying, hey, we want to issue fines of $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, right. those kinds of things. And you have to literally get dragged down to Austin right. to go in front of these people who are, you know, prosecutor, judge, jury, executioner, they're everybody.
Sure.
And it's a real problem.
Well, it is a real problem, the lack of due process, like I said. And remember, this is an agency that works 24 days out of an entire year. I mean, this commission does not meet that often. They're not experienced. They're not even experienced with their own statute that they're there to enforce. I mean, half the time it's a bureaucratic staff-driven process making recommendations to them, and they are just
which they are, you know, typically going to rubber stamp.
Absolutely rubber stamping them. In fact, one of the things that I discussed with the commission when I was there was the fact that the commission staff actually meets and talks with the commission behind closed doors without having the accused present.
Yeah, really, you know, as an attorney, I'm an attorney, you're an attorney, we're not allowed to go talk to the judge right. behind closed doors.
Right.
It has to happen in open court with all parties present, with right. a record. You know, there's a record of these things. And here we've got this agency where they're trying to free up their rules
right.
to say, let's make it really clear we can have conversations in secret.
Well, and the most startling thing was an admission by the commission that, you know, they said, well, it really doesn't matter that we don't right. have any due process because we're just a minor speed bump on the road. You know, this is all going to get reviewed by a court later. But, you know, to the person who's actually standing in front of the commission and facing the potential of a $1,000 fine, a $5,000 fine, it does matter. It does matter whether or not they've been heard. You know, and you know, because Americans fundamentally believe in fairness. If we believe that the process is fair, then we'll accept the punishment as being just. But if the process isn't fair, then we won't. And that's what you see at the Ethics Commission is a lack of process that provides for any modicum of fairness.
Yeah, and so part of the problem is the fact of the matter is there may be an appellate right. You go through this process, you wait a year and a half before you get to have your day in court, right, the day of this right. hearing, and you go drive all the way down to Austin, and you go in front of this panel of people who are not legal experts,
right?
Who then interrogate you and make decisions, and then you don't like that. Well, then you got to go do it again, maybe a year later, and you know, 3-4 years after you were involved in some local election,
right.
You finally then can say, okay, well, they've decided they want to fine me $1,000,
right?
And so then you appeal to a real court, but in reality, the commission has never tolerated that level of pushback. They always fight and gum up the works in the court process in the, you know, handful, 4, 5, 6 times that people have been, you know, able and willing to take sure. at the distance.
Yeah. You know, and even court decisions that are relevant to what they try to regulate, you know, the former chairman, Paul Hobby, actually said, you know, it's not our job to read Court of Appeals opinions and figure out what the law is, even though the courts have decided, you know, these things are enforceable or unenforceable based upon whether or not they're constitutional.
Yeah, and so they'll make every individual litigant take them to court and run it through the process,
absolutely.
Costing hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal
fees. On the
fees,
same issue sometimes.
On the same issue that they've already lost on.
Right, absolutely. You know, it really is run amok. It's something that is in definite need of reform. And, you know, I applaud them for adopting rules. I mean, you've taken 25 years to get around to doing it. It's important that we have those rules in place. But they need to be a little more thoughtful about what it is that they're doing and what effect they're going to have on people's right to speak and engage in political activity, because the rules that they're adopting are actually just going to do more to stifle political participation than they are to encourage it. And at the end of the day, you know, this is a commission that was founded basically to set salaries for members of the legislature, and it's been co-opted into regulating individuals' speech rights.
Yeah, it's just a rogue agency that's got a lot of problems. Well, I appreciate you joining us today, Trey. It's really encouraging that President Trump would pick somebody like you who understands these problems to go in and potentially, you know, to be on the Federal Elections Commission, obviously confirmation hearings and waiting, all of that stuff, but to be able to be be there and to look at these things and say, you know, what's just, what's right, trying to get to a result that isn't abusive of Americans' First Amendment rights.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tony. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Jack, have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program sponsored by Empower Texans?
No, what's that?
It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials and hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can compete with your friends and fellow activists across the state by watching a live leaderboard, as well as see what others are doing across the great state of Texas. You can even earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearers logo on it, or a multitude of other prizes. For example, we just gave away a custom Glock handgun. With the Texas Torchbearers program, it's even easier to make a difference. So, Jack, are you going to sign up to be a Texas Torchbearer?
Way ahead of you, Zach. You had me at custom boots.
Awesome. Well, as Benjamin Franklin once said, a republic, if you can keep it, everyone should sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
Now that we're in the summer months, a lot of folks are traveling. That means a lot of folks are interacting with the dreaded TSA. But what for many of us is a minor annoyance can be a real violation of dignity for some Americans. Brandon Waltons tells us more in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
2018 is shaping up to be a record year for air travel, with millions of Americans taking to the skies. But before being able to squeeze into your ever-shrinking airline seat on your likely delayed flight, there's one additional obstacle every traveler knows all too well: the TSA. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. For many travelers, airport security can be a minor annoyance, but for those with certain medical conditions, the experience is often intrusive and humiliating. Recently, Texas State Representative Drew Springer posted a disturbing video on social media of a TSA agent performing a pat-down on his wife, who has long been confined to a wheelchair. In the short clip, the agent can be seen essentially groping the entirety of Springer's wife's body. He was forced to watch helplessly as his wife was subjected to what he referred to as, quote, 12 minutes of feeling up. Incidents like this are disgusting, and worse yet, they're commonplace. Those who wear medical devices like pacemakers or artificial hips, or like Mrs. Springer, who require the use of a wheelchair, know these inappropriate and intrusive physical searches all too well. These were horrible enough when they were first implemented, but they've become worse, especially since the TSA rolled out new enhanced pat-down techniques, in which agents are permitted to use the back of their hands to inspect individuals' breasts and groins, and also to insert their hands into passengers' waistlines and pant legs. At least they're keeping us safe, some might say. Surely the heightened scrutiny is catching potential dangers. But that's not the case. Performance tests on the TSA, in which banned items are purposely brought through security, show agents missing anywhere from 70 to 95% of contraband. Weapons, explosives, and drugs sail through, while agents threaten grandmothers with arrest for the high crime of a 4-ounce shampoo bottle in their carry-on. This has to stop. How can Texas be the nation's leading voice for limited government if we allow those with badges to routinely reach into law-abiding citizens' pants? In 2011, the Texas legislature considered a bill criminalizing invasive groping by the TSA in Texas. That bill passed the Texas House with unanimous support before being killed by then-Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst in the Senate. When the bill was placed on the call of a special session by Governor Rick Perry, the bill then passed the Senate, only for the House to then take its turn thwarting the measure. There's little evidence that the TSA has somehow become more popular or effective than it was in 2011, and since then the procedures have become even more abusive, invasive, and offensive. It's time for Texas to say enough is enough to security theater that is antithetical to the principles our nation was founded on, and lead the way on reining in those abusive tactics. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Brandon Waltons.
Well, we've reached the end of the program. That's all I've got for you this week. If you're listening on the radio, you can never miss a program if you subscribe to our podcast, available on iTunes, Texas Scorecard Radio Podcast. You can also catch articles from all the folks you hear on the podcast up at texasscorecard.com. Thanks for listening, and join us back here next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.